Up next, we're talking money with the man responsible for fee-only financial planning in Ohio, founder of the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, and expert advisor to the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Kiplinger's Personal Finance, and U.S. News & World Report. It's the only financial planning show on radio, Managing to Be Wealthy, with your host, John Sestina.
Good evening and welcome to Managing to Be Wealthy. This is Tyler Cook sitting in for John Sestina tonight, joined by Tad Harrington and Cole Hammack, both certified financial planners. Certified.
Certified.
I'll get it out. Guys, thanks for being here. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm still not used to being the certified financial planner. So
that's right. Congratulations. I don't know if we officially said that on air, but that's a huge achievement, Cole.
Yeah, it's convenient enough to be on last week. That's how Steven brought me in, but it's still new to hear every time, so definitely love
it. Keep
saying
it. Yeah, I got to get used to that, right?
Yeah.
Seeing your name with those letters after it now.
Three more letters.
That's right.
That's what I need.
Congratulations, man.
Thank you.
That's awesome. We're all happy for you.
Thank you.
Great achievement. Well, we've got a great show planned tonight. A lot of topics to get to, as always. Please call with any questions at 821-9886 or 800-610-WTVN. And, you know, guys, we always like to start with the current events of the week. And, boy, there's some good ones this week. A lot going on. And we've been talking about the tax bill over and over again. And that's probably closer than ever as far as timing to getting something done. I think the target is still next week is what I heard as of this morning. Yep. There's a lot to be worked out and things need to be signed and whatnot. So we may touch on that. But one story just jumped out at me as I was preparing for the show. And we'll get into that. It's another Social Security scam. You hear them all the time.
Yeah.
This one was hard to believe, though.
What a
hard
world
to believe.
We live in.
It is.
Right.
And it makes you wonder what else is going on that we don't know about. So we'll get into that. And then also I saw an interesting story regarding Bitcoin. You know, we're getting a lot of questions about Bitcoin, whether it's clients, family, friends, neighbors, you name it. Seems to be the hot topic amongst a lot of people these days in the water cooler discussion that I'm sure is happening at job sites across the country. And I'm sure somebody that bought in at Bitcoin at $100 a coin is feeling pretty good right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? At that, what, I think this morning it was $19,000 per coin.
We're back?
I think it's worked its way back up. Yeah.
Exciting.
So we're going to talk about that, and because we get a lot of questions about it. So we're going to dive into that. And one item related to that was there was a Long Island woman, Long Island, New York, a woman who has been laundering money to ISIS using Bitcoin. And it's interesting because you don't hear people don't talk about that part of it. But we're going to dive a little deeper and go through that and get into some specifics there. And then also, guys, want to get into what we call PNC insurance, or better known as property and casualty insurance, still better known as your auto, home, and umbrella insurance, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot to go through there. And the fourth quarter is a good time to sit down and review your coverage and make sure that you're adequately set up going into the new year. So we get all through that, guys. If we have any time left at the end, we've got some vacation travel tips. It's the time of year people start traveling for the holidays, and spring break's going to be here before we know it. So we've got some tips there from actually CPAs, Certified Public Accountants, and there's some of their tips with travel. So let's jump right into it. Without further ado, let's talk about this Social Security scam. So what happened here, guys?
Yeah, essentially here what we have is somebody who was collecting Social Security benefits. The person then passed away, and then I think it was a family member?
Her
daughter.
Dorothy Griffin.
Yeah.
Let's put a name to this. This is pretty crazy.
So Dorothy then still collected the Social Security checks and then just put together some false statements and claimed that she was still alive so she could still receive and cash the checks.
Yes, actually, Dorothy was the grandmother or the mother, and her daughter Emma was collecting the checks. So what happened was Dorothy started getting her benefits in 1986, retirement mm-hmm. benefits, right? She was old enough, started collecting benefits. At 1991, her daughter, Emma, was approved to then start cashing those checks on behalf of her mother. Okay, that happens sometimes, people's health and whatnot. That seems okay.
Yeah.
The problem was her mother died 24 years ago, and she still collected checks until a few months ago.
Which is illegal.
Yeah, 24 years since her mother's passing, she collected Social Security checks. And the grand total was just under $300,000 that she collected. And the woman who was collecting the checks is now 66 years old, so she was in her 40s when mm-hmm. she started collecting it, and she freely admitted the wrongdoing. She felt bad about it.
Yeah.
She got a 13-month prison sentence.
Which is actually down from the 10 years that it probably should have been, but just because she felt bad and apparently didn't have a history of any sort of...
Seems like a slap on the wrist, right?
Exactly. I mean, this is a real crime.
Yeah, and she said that she used the money for travel and luxurious type things. It wasn't like a necessity to keep going or living. It was, she just completely scammed the system.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you wonder, Tad, right? What else is going on?
Yeah, I'm sure this is, well, I don't want to say the tip of the iceberg, but you know there's this going on in other circumstances that we just have no idea about.
Yeah.
So.
Crazy. I was reading the comments on this article too, and one, this is, you know, going by the comments, you never know, but one of the comments was written by a former police officer and said he worked on a case where they had buried a body underneath the kitchen and collected the checks. A deceased husband buried the body underneath the kitchen and kept collecting the checks for a number of years.
Sorry, what?
Yeah, right.
I don't know if anybody watches the show Shameless on Showtime.
I haven't seen that, no.
Oh, no. It's a family in Chicago, and it was a big to-do. They kept doing this, and they were really upset when, you know, Aunt Susan's money stopped coming in, even though she'd been passed away for 20 years, so...
It happens. It certainly happens. Well, let's shift gears to another current event this week, and that was, again, relating to Bitcoin. And by the way, we're going to explain what that all is, what it means, the purpose of it, the goals behind it, and so forth, the technology behind it, which I think is a key. But this was a little concerning. And again, as a Long Island woman was indicted on Thursday after she allegedly laundered more than $85,000 through Bitcoin to ISIS.
What else are you going to do?
And that's, you know, people don't talk about it that much, but... Bitcoin has been used for a variety of black market operations.
Yeah. I mean, going back, what's it been? Maybe a decade or so, maybe five. I'm not even sure how long Bitcoin's been around, but
2009, I think.
2009. So going on a decade.
Yep.
It kind of, and I don't want to say started, but kind of where it found its niche was kind of almost like a black market eBay, where you could buy guns, drugs, all kinds of things that, you know, are on the dark web that you really just don't hear about anymore.
Right. And it's been ignored.
Yeah.
And I think there's a reason for that today, right? Why it's ignored, and it's greed.
Yeah.
Plain and simple.
Yeah. Well, you're
plain
right.
And simple.
Because
we're going to get to that, but yeah. It's... Go ahead.
When it first came out, it was almost shunned upon a little bit because of this. It was the Silk Road. It was funding that.
Yeah.
Wasn't traceable. And then now that it's a thing, people kind of push that to the side like you're getting at, Tyler.
Right. So this woman in Long Island, 27 years old, she was charged in federal court with bank fraud, conspiracy to commit money laundering, and then they accused her of, between June and July, using 16 credit cards that she obtained by using Bitcoin, and then sent the money, even got a loan through a Manhattan bank for another $22,000, and she sent the money to ISIS because later they caught her at the airport trying to take off using a Pakistani passport and head over to Syria. So... Great job. Again, the stuff you don't hear about on the daily news. I found this just by searching. I didn't hear it on the nightly news or anywhere else.
Yeah.
That doesn't get the headlines, but it's important. In the end, kudos to our national security people for catching this, right?
Absolutely.
It makes you wonder, right? What's the purpose behind some of these things?
And I don't really know so much that there is one. It's just kind of a way to just keep everything kind of under the rugs almost. And it's a magical sort of thing that's going on right now. It's
right.
Really weird.
Right, so again, we've got the question, should I own Bitcoin? Should I invest in it? Is it a good idea, a bad idea? And you know us on this show, we don't talk too much about individual securities, investments. That's not our game, right? We're focused on financial planning. But we do get these questions, and so we have to be educated about ourselves and be able to give a good answer. So when we get back from the break, we're going to dive into this and explain what Bitcoin really is, what's the purpose behind it, and is it something you should own? So give us a call at 821-9886 or 800-610-WTVN. You're listening to Managing to Be Wealthy on News Radio 610 WTVN. Welcome back. This is Tyler Cook sitting in for John tonight, joined by Tad Harrington and Cole Hammack, both certified financial planners. Before the break, we were talking about Bitcoin, and it seems to be all the rage, right? It's getting a lot of the headlines,
yeah.
I'm sure. Everybody's talking about it, and it kind of reminds me of the time frame. Oh, geez. It was probably 2008, 2009, probably more towards the end of 2008, beginning of 2009, where we were just coming out of the bottoms, or we were just about to bottom, and as far as the economy and the stock market back then. And I think I was in either California or Florida at some conference, and my cab driver, he asked what you're in town for, and so I explained, you know, financial planning conference. And then first thing was, oh, I just went to the mall today and I bought a bunch of gold from the gold vending machine.
Wait, what?
Yes.
Was it Saudi Arabia?
No, it was not. But it started over there.
Exactly. That's why
right.
I ask. Yeah.
Right. And you could go, people probably remember this, you could go to the mall, even here in Columbus, you could go anywhere, and there were gold vending machines. You put your money in, it spits out either a little gold coin or even a small minted kind of gold bar looking thing, probably plated, not solid. But that happened recently too to somebody I was talking to last week. in our profession, and they had a cab driver or an Uber or something, and as soon as they figured out what they did, the first question was, what do you think about Bitcoin? And typically when it gets to that stage, it's had a good run, right? If the purpose behind your investment is return or some other focus, by the time you hear it out here, a lot of the real money's already been made. Take, for example, I think it's up, what percent is it up this year, Bitcoin?
1,500, I think.
1,500%.
Yeah.
1,500%.
That's it?
For perspective, the S&P is up about 20%, right? So it sounds great. Let's get more return, guys. Well, what's the problem?
Where do we start?
Exactly. And so that's the first question. So if somebody asked you, hey, should I invest in Bitcoin? What's your first response?
Well, I think for all of us, we would say, first, we have to narrow in on why we're investing in the first place.
Yep.
So why are we investing? And then you can filter down and say, why does Bitcoin or does Bitcoin fit that profile, whatever you need to do?
Right. When I ask that question, why do you want to invest mm-hmm. in Bitcoin, or why are you interested in it? And the first answer, I've yet to get a different answer, but it's what I just said. Oh, it's up 1,000%.
Yeah.
Why not? Right. And again, when you talk about more return, more, that tends to be greed.
Yeah. So there are people out there that are saying Bitcoin it's going to revolutionize the way that we pay people. It's going to be this new online currency. So there might be some really true believers in the technology and Bitcoin itself. So that's why they're buying it. But I'd say 99% of the people are where you're talking about is, oh, because I want to make some money.
Exactly. And I want to get to the technology piece in just a second. But so when you ask that question, why, you get that answer, and then you have to take it a step further and really address what the goal is. And my kind of standard answer is, don't invest any more money than you can afford to lose in something like this. And the reason why is it reminds me, I mentioned gold a minute ago. Bitcoin reminds me of speculative investments. It's not like a company where you go in and analyze a balance sheet, look at earnings reports, and have a ready market in terms of statistics and data, right, that you can go get. Yep. This is all speculation.
There are no fundamentals. It is. It's very simply
that. That's
right.
Then.
Yeah, there's no way to value it like you can value a company. Or even other currencies. It's not even, or other fiat currencies. It's not really apples to apples yet.
Yeah, so let's take a minute here, guy. Let's explain what it actually is, because I'm sure there's people listening that Bitcoin, they might even think it's actual physical coins. It's actually not, right? It's all cryptocurrency, which is nothing you can hold in your hand. So it's not like a gold bar or a gold coin or silver coins. It's a cryptocurrency. It's a virtual currency. So give a little background just on what it is and how it works.
Yeah. So just kind of how it started helps frame that. And this came about in 2009 after the collapse in 2007, 2008. Mm-hmm. And essentially people were fed up, lost trust in the central agency or the government to control the money. So they thought, well, let's create a currency, which is online, that skips the middleman. So it's just peer-to-peer transactions. So Tyler, you and I transact together. There's no central bank controlling that, and it's all online, and it's done collectively. So you just think of it as an online journal that everybody participates, and everybody's confirming the data for each other, which is how it can stay accurate.
Yeah, and it's something that can't be altered, can't be changed. And what makes it, by no means am I an expert on this stuff. In fact, I'd love for an IT professional, somebody that knows this, to call in and give us some more information. But from what I'm understanding it's hard to hack because there are so many different people involved. And you really are trusting the other peers, as you said, Tad, the other peers in the setup to spread data. But it's all recorded, and then you create these chains of data sequenced, mm-hmm. and it can never be erased. So they say, right?
Yeah.
I think anything can be hacked. This is apparently is harder to be hacked than say if you had your money with one bank or one institution. The hacker has to go to one spot, right? Look at Equifax, look at Target, look at all these little breaches we've had. That's one spot. This, you'd have to go across millions of different databases, if I'm understanding it correctly. So that makes sense. But I think the real value here is not necessarily in Bitcoin itself, the cryptocurrency. What I'm interested in learning more about is the actual technology underneath it, and that's the blockchain technology. So Tad, you were explaining a little bit how that works, but I think a good analogy here is, everybody remembers the rise of the internet, right, in the 1990s?
Mm-hmm.
And what happened in 99 and 2000, we had a big burst, right? The tech bubble burst, as it's called. It wasn't the internet that went away. It was the companies affiliated with that technology, right? So in my mind, I think of blockchain as like the internet, the technology. And Bitcoin is right now the one that's getting all the headlines, the company that gets all the headlines associated with the technology, in this case, which is blockchain, right? So I think the technology has more valuable than the actual cryptocurrency itself. I even read some things that said that they could use this in poor areas of the world where people, all they need is an internet connection to get on, and you can start transacting with people across the world, whereas now you have to go through banks and there's bigger fees and all sorts of things. So there may be some good value here too, but I get hung up on the speculation part of it, and I just have a hard time when you read these stories, and Cole, you mentioned it about the Silk Road thing and the black market operations. That gives me pause.
Yeah, and there's the layers that you're talking about. Not right now, if you're speculating on this investment, there's two things you have to get right. One is the blockchain going to be like the internet, like you said? The second one is Bitcoin going to be that vehicle that's going to be the main one?
Right.
There's I don't even know, probably thousands of cryptocurrencies out there. So is Bitcoin the one?
Which one sticks, the most popular?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So you're betting a lot on a couple of those things, and it's so early in the game for this. It's such a new thing that, like you said before, my advice would be like, if you really want to dabble in this, just make sure it's an amount of money that you don't care if it gets wiped away tomorrow, because we've seen it. We've seen people who have done this and grown from a little amount of money to millions with this, but at the same time, there's still that anxiety with that because that could all be wiped out tomorrow.
Yeah, and you got to think too, what happens when governments come in and start trying to regulate this, and particularly the U.S. government?
Yeah,
right?
Coinbase is an exchange that you can download and buy this on, and they just announced that they're actually giving the IRS, everybody who's made a transaction, they're giving them their information. So yeah, the government's already tiptoeing, they're getting their foot in the door there.
Well, back in 2013, when that was the raid you talked about earlier, called the FBI raid, the Silk Road stuff, the FBI seized 144,000 bitcoins, which again, right now that's 19,000 per coin. So do the math there. But the IRS sold those off back in, I think it was the same year, 2013, for about $48 million because they wanted to get their money and move on. But that's one of the big concerns is here in the States is that it's not regulated. There's fears. The IRS fears that not all these transactions with Bitcoin are actually being documented and regulated. So the tax status of that comes into play. And then I think when you get bigger regulation and you have some of those other regulations is really what they are coming into play, that could also put some brakes on this this euphoria that we're seeing. It's kind of a herd mentality, right? Everybody's heading in the same direction. It makes you wonder. It gives you pause. And again, I would not subject your long-term retirement to this. Cole, even at your age?
It's tough.
You millennials, too. You know, they're all about Bitcoin.
Well, it's so fancy, and you know, it looks like it would be shiny if you could actually hold one.
That's right.
But we have someone in our office, they likened it, it's Lamborghinis or food stamps.
So, depending on the day, right?
Yeah, you don't want to be there, so just invest, if you're going to, what you're willing to lose.
That's right. Well, good. We beat this up enough, guys. When we come back, I want to shift topics, and we'll get into some property and casualty insurance items. And this is a great time of year to sit down and go through that, along with a few other planning items. And another story of fraud within the industry, right? In this case, it was a former NFL linebacker who took 60 people to town over false statements of investment returns and false promises. So we'll talk more about that, too, when we get back from the break. Give us a call at 821-9886 or 800-610-WTVN. You're listening to Managing to Be Wealthy on News Radio 610 WTVN. Welcome back to Managing to Be Wealthy. This is Tyler Cook sitting in for John tonight, joined by Cole Hammack and Tad Harrington, both certified financial planners. It's nice saying that, Cole. Over the break, we were talking about Bitcoin, and we've got a caller here, actually, who I understand owns Bitcoin. Jason, welcome to the show.
Yes, sir. How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
So you own Bitcoin, huh?
Yes, sir. I currently hold just over 9 coins that I acquired back around 2010 from mining. Back when the value of Bitcoin was actually pretty low.
Yeah, we actually didn't even get to that topic, right, about mining and what goes on there, but very interesting. So that's worth what today? 19,000 per coin, 9 coins. You're got a good chunk of change there.
Yeah, sitting probably close to $180,000, $190,000. Haven't really even looked at cashing it out yet just because of security concerns associated with doing that. A lot of the exchanges, especially the ones that aren't based in the United States, are very prone to intrusions, which ends up meaning that you get your Bitcoin stolen. And the way Coinbase works right now, I think they're reporting all transactions that exceed a certain dollar value per month to the IRS. And the SEC's already kind of come out and said that they want taxpayers to treat this stuff, I believe, as like a capital gains. So meaning if I acquired it when it was $20 a coin and now it's $19,000, well, I'd own the capital gains tax on the, you know, $18,880.
Right. So let me ask you this. I don't know if you were listening before. Obviously, you were. What was your reasoning or your why? Why did you initially get into Bitcoin?
I initially got into it because working in IT, it seemed that people who were involved in web design, development, server hosting, that kind of thing, were actually interested in taking this as a currency. And initially, it looked like a pretty good way to actually get web hosting for cheaper than you could anywhere else. You know, if you ran your computer for a few days a week, you would acquire enough Bitcoin to host your web server for a year. Now, with the way Bitcoin's risen, that's really not practical anymore. And a little while back, it's called a difficulty increase. So they actually increased the difficulty for the miners, which means that mining with like a graphics card, which is what I used to do back in 2010, isn't really profitable anymore. If you're looking to make a profit, you really need to move into what's considered an application-specific integrated circuit or an ASIC chip. And those things are what the big Bitcoin farms today are using.
So. Very interesting. So it sounds like your goal necessarily wasn't to pick up a bunch of investment returns, so to say, but more so on a business side, a way to fund different operations.
Yeah, and an easy way to do business with international entities without having to go through some middleman to convert my currency. It always annoyed me quite a bit that if I wanted to pay someone in Great Britain, I was going to have to pay U.S. Bank, you know, $40 to change the currency for me.
Right.
and then if you have any extra currency, you know, they'll buy it back from you at a substandard rate. So
there is a cost to doing business, that for sure. Well, thanks for the call, Jason. We appreciate all the info.
No problem. Take care. Bye.
Take care. Yeah, that's very interesting. I think part of that is the why, right? It's a different why. It's not it's not the euphoria you see now, right? He mentioned 2010, I think, is when he started. Yeah. It was about a way of an exchange, a monetary exchange, a way to pay somebody else overseas or in business to run a graph. What he said with the graphics cards and everything else he did, but now I think that's changed, right? It's changed to we're up 1500%. Got to get it. I think that's very dangerous.
So he sounded like he was more looking at this as a currency standpoint. So it's a different currency that's just easier for me to use to work overseas. But if you think about that right now, that's what this is ultimately trying to be as a currency, but it's not going to get there at least anytime soon that I see, because nobody's going to buy $20 of pizza worth Bitcoin, because in a year, if this keeps going the way it is, that's going to be a couple $1,000 pizza.
Right.
You know, because value's increase. So
that's right.
I just don't see it happening.
And I mean, there are retailers that accept it now, to the caller's point, and we'll see how it plays out. But I think the real value is underlying technology, that blockchain technology. So we'll see how it plays out. It could be totally wrong. You know, but again, I was glad to hear he didn't subject his whole retirement to this type of thing. So, well, good. Before the break, I mentioned, again, it seems like every time we do the show, guys, at least monthly, and we do the show every week, but at least once a month, we're seeing a new scam of some sort. We talked about the Social Security one earlier. This one is a former NFL linebacker and an ex-Merrill Lynch broker gets 40 years in prison for a $10 million fraud. And again, it goes back to the theme of this topic so far with Bitcoin and everything else is greed, right? This guy was promising people, his investors, right, 60 different victims, and he met them through associations with the NFL and through the University of Virginia in this case. And from 2010 to 2016, Merrill Robinson is his name. He misrepresented investment returns to his clients, promising them that he could put it in a safe investment and get 10 to 20% every year.
Imagine if you put that in Bitcoin, though.
Right. Unbelievable, though. But what happened? There's two avenues here. Number one, of course, he did a shady thing by just even saying that. The second part, though, was the people, the victims, they let themselves fall prey to that, thinking a safe investment could get you 10 to 20%. Anybody that's promising a rate of return, that should immediately raise a red flag in your mind. And you got to go back to, okay, how's this person compensated? Right? That's the question you got to ask. How are they compensated? We can do a whole show on that, but He was using it as a personal piggy bank to pay for his lavish lifestyle.
Yeah, because you were saying compensation. He could have said it, he was compensated in any way, but the point that I see is that this was his personal piggy bank. So
yeah.
I'm not sure if it dives into detail there, but I assume they would receive a statement. Those statements must have been just fraudulent, because if he's dipping into the money, he's probably representing the account values a little bit differently, kind of like Bernie Madoff.
Bernie Madoff, yep.
So I just think you got to really dive in and just make sure everything's transparent. So are the statements, are you writing your check to Joe Smith Advisor, or are you writing a check to a bigger company like a TD Ameritrade or Charles Schwab or Fidelity, the custodian?
Where are you sending
that separation?
Yeah, your savings. Where are you sending the money for your savings? Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. You always want to use an independent third-party custodian. That's very, very important.
Yeah.
Well, good. Well, again, it's hopefully we still start to slow down. And again, the purpose of this whole show is to educate people, give them the tools they need to identify things like this. And you know, it's, if it's too good to be true, it probably is. So let's shift gears, guys. Want to get into some property casualty insurance. And this is something we spend a lot of time with our clients on. You know, it's really, really important. Talking about your auto insurance, your homeowner's insurance, and your umbrella policy, which is excess liability, if you have a need for that. But again, remember, at being fee-only financial planners, we don't sell products. So we're not here to sell insurance. We're not selling life insurance. We're not selling disability or anything. We're giving unbiased recommendations based upon what's needed in that particular case. And one area we find all the time is overlooked is property and casualty insurance, your auto, your home, and your umbrella. So let's start with auto insurance, guys, in a few minutes here before we go to another break, and just talk about some things that people need to be paying attention to and talking to their agent about.
Well, before we dive into that, you mentioned that this is one of the most overlooked areas, mm-hmm. and I agree with you because it doesn't pay anybody money, right? I'm not going to waste my time evaluating your auto insurance if I don't get paid off. That's the mentality that a lot of people have.
Right.
So being fee-only kind of wipes that away. Secondly, if you're going to do all these things and look at life insurance and disability insurance to protect yourself in case of a catastrophic event, you want to make sure that you're protected in case of a catastrophic loss, whether it's something with your house or if you get in an accident, let's say it's your fault and you're liable and there's a big lawsuit, you got to make sure that you're protected. So I agree. If you're going to take the time to do everything else, focus on this stuff as well.
Yeah, and your liability is a big reason why you have auto insurance, right? It's the catastrophic thing. So, you see the commercials for state minimum coverages and things like that. Again, that wouldn't be...
The ones with the catchy jingles, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be our first place as far as recommendations on how much you have. But you got to have a conversation with a knowledgeable agent, somebody who's not just trying to sell a product and undercut the next guy. You want to have a purpose behind the conversation. And so you have to have that conversation about what your exposures really are.
Yeah.
You have a lot of people coming and going from the house, or do you drive other people around in your vehicle? There's a lot of things you got to talk about.
Yeah, and a lot of the problem, too, is we find time and time again that some insurance agents are just order takers.
Right.
So they're not asking you questions. They're not being proactive. And, of course, we've seen some good ones in the time that we've been doing this. Mm-hmm. But if they're not asking you questions, time and time again, something's going to be missed.
Yeah, typically what we see is two things is when you hear from your agent. It's when they have something to sell you or you call them. Right?
Yeah.
There is that rare, unique bunch that will proactively reach out upon renewal, which I mm-hmm. love. I love, love, love that. And you got to go through it. So you got to look at things like your deductibles. You know, for example, your collision deductible. Tad, what's your deductible off the top of your head?
$500.
All right. So if you had a fender bender and it's going to cost you $600, let's say, to repair the bumper,
right?
Would you make a claim on your insurance? Pay your $500 deductible and then have insurance cover the difference, or would you just pay for the whole thing out of pocket?
Probably not. I would probably pay whole thing
because
then you got to make the claim and risk your rates going up and all that.
So what's a planning idea there? What could you do?
So I could bump that up to, let's say, $1,000.
Your deductible.
And then my deductible. Yep. So then if I'm already planning on paying that myself anyway, well, then that might lower my premiums a little bit. So,
but that's the question you have to ask the agent, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes raising your deductible from $500 to $1,000, it may save you $10 or $15 a year.
That's not worth it. But you have to understand that.
Exactly. Yeah. Or if it saves you $50, $100 a year, well, maybe that's something you should consider.
Yeah.
So these are questions and dialogue that you have to have with your insurance agent that don't happen all the time. So we're going to continue with this when we get back from the break. You're listening to Managing to Be Wealthy on News Radio 610 WTVN. Welcome back. This is Tyler Cook, Tad Harrington, and Cole Hammack, all certified financial planners. Thanks again for listening tonight. Any last-minute questions, call us at 821-9886 or 800-610-WTVN. And, before the break, we were talking more about property and casualty insurance, specifically your auto insurance. And As I said earlier, the point of this is to teach people and give them some takeaways and things that they can do on their own. So to that point, Tad, we started our workshop, which we have another one coming up. When?
Yeah, the next workshop will actually be Thursday nights, January 11th, 18th, and 25th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. And now we actually have an online person. We did the online pilot kind of last time, but we're offering it both online and in person. So if you're in the Columbus area and you want to come by in person, stop by. Online, you can select that too and then just join from the comfort of your own home. But if you're interested in doing that, you can go to our website, managingtobewealthy.com/classroom, and just sign up, and then we'll contact you with further information.
Right, that's the location and times and everything you just said. The location's over off of Kenny Road in Henderson at the Hub.
Yep, right across from Staples.
That's a beautiful facility.
It is, yeah.
Great facility. This is our, fourth or fifth round of these, I believe.
Yeah, this will be the fifth one, and it's been really nice because it's really catered toward somebody who is just trying to kind of take the next step with their financial plan. So we get a lot of callers that call in and ask specific questions, but this is a chance where you can come in and actually kind of put it to the test. So we'll walk through, help you figure out where are you today? What's your balance sheet? What kind of cash flow are you working with? Are you in good shape, bad shape? And then where do you want to go? And then figure out, are we on track to get there? And then all these things like property and casualty that we're talking about, all those fit in to help make sure that we're protecting ourselves against anything that can come up.
And what's the cost?
Absolutely free.
Complimentary.
Yeah.
How do we afford that?
We're happy to do it.
That's right.
Because we know that there's others out there that are come to the free dinner seminar, but we're going to pitch or sell you something. Yeah,
that's right.
No free dinner.
Yeah, there's one nice takeaway too, and it's our workbook that we put together, and that has a lot of good takeaways and to-dos, and there will be homework, and again, it's about learning and really trying to build your own plan. As we tell everybody, we think everybody should have a financial plan. Whether or not you should pay for one is another discussion.
Yep.
Right? So, all right, back to it in the time we've got left, gentlemen. Let's dive into a few more things with auto insurance. And we'll get to homeowners if we can. We talked about your liability limits. Again, you probably want to have, from a lot of people, it's either, $250,000 per incident and $500,000 overall. That might sound like a lot, but it goes quick. Oh, yeah. It really goes quick.
Well, the state minimum is only, I think, $25,000.
For perspective, great point.
Yeah, and so if you're getting your quote in, 15 minutes or whatever, or these other ones that advertise right. How quick and easy it is to get a quote, a lot of times you're not getting the coverage you need. So even though an insurance company will tell you that $25,000 is enough, you got to dig deeper.
What those insurance companies do, by the way, too, is they use marketing dollars and they target different parts of the country. So say they target the Midwest, for example. Take one of those big names you see on TV. And they will specifically try to come in and undercut the competition, the local smaller agents. And then what do? A couple years later, 2 years after you probably bought the coverage, they start to increase your rate to where it should have been to start. And along the way, you've probably not got the best coverage that you needed. So you really got to dig into this. It's not all companies are equal. Not all coverage is equal. And we've learned that the hard way with some scenarios, too. And again, a lot of that, too, is not just if you're at fault, but if somebody hits you in a car, somebody causes an accident and doesn't have enough insurance, they're underinsured. Or the worst case scenario, somebody hits you that doesn't have any insurance whatsoever. Right? So you've got two parts of that to look at. And that those clauses protect you. You got to protect your own nest egg at the same time. So there's a lot of layers to that. In the few minutes we have left, guys, let's switch to homeowners insurance. What's one of the most important things to look at with your homeowner insurance policy? I would say the dwelling coverage, how much your actual building is covered, not the land, right? But the cost to rebuild it. Do you have what's called true replacement cost coverage? That's really, really important. And again, I was talking with an insurance agent last week, I think it was. And he said some of these policies, say a house that burns down, or I thought of an example of, I think it was a couple of years ago, the house that literally exploded in Upper Arlington. You guys remember that? The gas explosion?
Right. Yeah.
They're still fixing the homes around that area.
I believe it, yeah.
But think about the one house that was completely destroyed. There may have been a clause, and I'm just total speculation because I don't know what company they were with, but some insurance companies will have a clause that says if your house burns down or you have a total loss, you have to rebuild on the exact same lot. You've got to rebuild in the same spot. Well, think about that. That could be an emotional issue for a lot of people. They don't want to rebuild in the same place that just burned to the ground or literally exploded, right? So you've really got to dig into the details of these policies. And quite frankly, not a lot of the agents will do that. So again, part of our review process is to prompt the agent to do this with you. Look through it. Again, we don't sell insurance. That's not our game. We're focusing on what's best for you and what each person needs. And the specifics of the policy are very, very important. So anything to add to that, guys? Liability limits are also important with homeowners insurance.
I think one of the more overlooked ones is personal property or the contents of the home.
Sure.
So there's a limit on there that'll replace all the stuff within your home, so furniture, electronics. But it caps out at certain limits for certain things, like jewelry. It might have a $1,000 limit. So if you're going out getting something nice for your sweetheart over Christmas,
yeah,
you might want to make sure that you get that what they call scheduled, so that it's insured on the side. There's other things if you have antiques, guns. So you got to look at the policy and see what they actually cover those up to.
Sure, you have coverage up to those certain limits, and there will also be things that the coverage could exclude. For example, it may not cover mold.
Yeah.
Boy, I went through a mold issue recently, and I can't believe how costly that is. Thankfully, and again, I'm a big proponent of renting, so I rent, so I didn't have to pay for it. But the point was, it was a major overhaul, which included removing of outdoor siding and wood and all that stuff just to get to the inside issue. So some of the policies may not cover that. Flooding, man, we saw that earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
Think about the hurricanes in Florida and Texas and everywhere else. So you really got to dig in and take a look to make sure that you're properly covered. But we're running out of time, guys. It's been a great show. And as always, feel free to visit our website during the week, managingtobewealthy.com. On the top right-hand corner, there's a button that says Take Action, and that'll lead you to a page where you can ask a planner and a certified financial planner any question you may have. We understand that some of the questions may be too personal to ask on air, but please visit that website and ask any question. One of our certified financial planners will get back to you confidentially. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. You've been listening to Managing to Be Wealthy on News Radio 610 WTVN.